There we go.
Okay. Come on, you're riding shoddy. Stop waiting for a sign. Come close and touch my body. Lots of us are going time!
Hello and welcome to the Bravo Outsider Podcast. I'm your host, Craig Midwinter, joined again by Dylan Ferguson. Dylan, how are you doing?
Shit. I've been beset by illness, and you could probably hear it in my voice. And hopefully I just sound extremely sexy and convincing to everyone out there in podcast land.
Just the two of us today, so we're going to dive right into what we're covering. We're talking about Real Housewives of Beverly Hills and Vanderpump Rules. Dylan, do you have a preference as to where you want to start?
I'm still stoked about the new Vanderpump and the return of Sandoval, so why don't we start with that?
Yeah, let's get into it. What did you find in terms of like the storytelling here that was really compelling to you?
Love Ann, the assistant.
Thanks. I wanted to just like have people over.
Oh.
She's so great. Yeah. Like just really funny. And it's just, she has such a great demeanor of being somebody who is not totally camera ready, who's like just like all her gestures and all her phrases like just so communicate the awkwardness of her position.
And even her posture.
Yeah. And just how awkward this is for her to be in this situation where she has to like be their friend, but not too much of their friend, like enough of their friend that they're like, you know, chill with her and like talk to her like a human being, but not enough that like they feel like she's involved in the drama and that the accusatory statements have to be directed at her and not through her. Like, I don't envy her position at all, but it's just a really fascinating position to be in and to just see the Tom and Ariana dynamic played out through this one really funny character was such an amazing thing for me.
Yeah, it's interesting to watch how she navigates this situation, because in the clips that we're seeing, I actually feel like Tom Sandoval like speaks to her on a more human level. Like he seems like he's, you know, a bit more personal with her, whereas the clip that we saw with like Ariana and her, where Ariana's gonna like let the dog out or whatever, is just like very cold.
Like a very nice hotel room.
That's not happening.
Okay.
I think that's very disrespectful and inappropriate. Mm-hmm. If he wants to have a party, he can have it somewhere else.
Good. Mm-hmm. Yes. Okay.
You can feel Ariana's anger towards Tom manifesting towards Anne.
Right. Because she is Tom's assistant, right? Not Ariana's assistant.
Right.
Like he's the one who's paying her. So that kind of makes sense that Tom would seem to be like more personable with her, where Ariana is mostly using her just to like as a vector to deliver mean messages to Tom, or just like, you know, to shut down everything he proposes. Yeah, it has to be very hard for her to like just absorb those comments from Ariana and be like, yep, I'm going to file away that message and bring it to the person it's intended to, without feeling like it's stabbing her, like that knife's going into her back. Just be like, yep, I will carry this knife into the other room for you. No worries. Got my gloves on.
It's interesting how her like job, her like off-camera job parallels the on-camera job of these personalities, because like she also has to be someone that like deals in information. Like she is this like person that is a conduit for exchanging information, and we actually see her picking and choosing when to deliver certain pieces of information. Like when Ariana says on camera to Anne, I'm gonna call the police and have a noise complaint, she holds that until a moment where she actually needs to use that. And it's interesting to see her also deal with information as currency.
Yeah, totally. There are definitely, like you say, things where one of them will be like, tell them this right now, and she'll like not do it right away and feel like it's probably not the best time. And then there's another point where she like, what is it that Tom suggests, you know, just having people there and out by midnight or something. And he's like, okay, wait, say this first. And she's like, I already sent it. Like it's already off. I thought that was a good idea. So it's already sent. Too late. Sorry. It's already sent.
Yeah.
She has to definitely takes a lot of skills to figure out, how to compartmentalize your emotions and how to like deal with the information skillfully. Very fascinating. I'm glad we got a lot of her. And also it makes me think how like so many of the people we see in these shows have like off-screen assistants, surely too. And I wonder how often they meet each other and if they hang out with each other after. I kind of want a reality TV show that's just about the assistants of reality TV stars. Just their lives, like, how they deal with these people.
And, Below Deck style, exactly. Workplace docu-soap about it. Yeah, I love that
idea. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That'd be really cool.
One other thing that kind of stood out to me watching this was how through the course of like Bravo and Real Housewives history, we have seen more complicated relationship dynamics where there have been breakups than we see with Tom and Ariana. And none of them have had to have this like full-time intermediary that has like brokered this situation. Like, I mean, just thinking about like with Lenny and Lisa on Real Housewives of Miami, they don't have someone that is like there 24/7 needing to like pass messages back and forth. And they've got like children that they have to co-parent. It's like really bizarre that Tom and Ariana like seemingly have no real need to stay attached in this way and like navigate these situations as jointly as other people in that we've seen in similar, you know, conflicts. But they need to have like a staff to manage the situation.
Yeah. It's just so awkward for everyone involved, but Anne just she has great delivery too. You know, when she's like, when Sandoval's like, oh, you know, if I have some people over, what's she going to do? And he's like, okay, yeah, so I'm sorry. Ariana did mention something about maybe calling the police. Just, like, that's so good. Just just constantly, you know, tiptoeing around all these pressure points and trying to avoid setting people off. Amazing stuff.
Totally. So one of the things that I think Vanderpump Rules, or the most recent season prior to this of Vanderpump Rules, did really well was bringing like using symbols within the show. I'm wondering if you picked up on any like symbols that are kind of emerging this season on Vanderpump Rules so far.
I mean, we've already mentioned the portrait of Tom and Ariana. You talked about that a bit in our episode covering the first episode of the season, which seems to be this kind of, you know, looming thing, their past relationship looming over them in like a frozen graphic form, an abstracted, you know, public version of them that they have to kind of deal with the weight of it hanging over them, like in the Sword of Damocles or something. So that's the one that jumps out for me. Otherwise, I'm not really sure if I've picked up on something. What about you?
Yeah, I think the thing that stood out to me mostly is the house that they live in. What it's representing so far to me is like Ariana putting this idea of herself in opposition with Tom. This idea she's putting ahead of everything else in her life. So like her own comfort, her relationship with Dan, like we are seeing this being represented in the house, like both how they kind of schedule their time around each other and how they try to leverage their position, specifically relating to this party. And also the sacrifices that Ariana is like willing to make about her are manifesting themselves physically inside the house. Like we see Ariana's room is just a complete disaster. It's right, mess everywhere. Yeah. She's got every possession that she owns, that she cares about, is like all tucked away in this tiny room that is hers. And she's doing it solely so that she can be in opposition to Tom's desire to like buy the house out from her. And she's really digging her heels in. So I'm curious as to how this symbol is going to evolve. And there is a moment at the end of this episode where, you know, James leaves Tom's party and ends up peeing on the bushes, and Allie's like,
Ariana's bush too.
Which is something that I thought was a really just kind of an interesting moment. And I'm curious as to what it is potentially foreshadowing here. my Libra moon hated it.
Yeah. When I see James pissing on a bush, my first instinct is always, what is this symbolizing? There's got to be something to dig into. No, I think you're right, though. And it definitely was remarkable, like you said, yeah, how like packed and what a disaster zone Ariana's room was. And it does kind of seem like a manifestation of like her, not to be too harsh on her, but maybe like putting these principles over her actual like comfort and recovery. It seems like instead of maybe trying to find the things that will help her move on with her life and move on to whatever the next stage in her life is, she's just so focused on making sure that like she doesn't give Tom anything and doesn't like accept any of his ideas, doesn't give him any ground, even if it's just like for the principle of the thing. But it kind of feels like she has like, you know, hemmed herself into this corner because she's placing that kind of petty principle over the importance of, you know, maybe healing and moving on.
Yeah, totally. Another like physical space that I thought was interestingly symbolic was we saw the closing of Pump this episode, which yeah. When I think about like mid-era Vanderpump Rules, like season 3 or 4 to like season 8, like I think of like Pump being like a really prominent prominent piece in Lisa's story specifically, and how that relates to everyone around her. And in the most recent season and this season so far, we're seeing like Lisa's tendrils kind of being removed from this group. They all are a lot more independent than they were. And the closing of Pump really feels like symbolic of us entering into a new era where, you know, that space is no longer as meaningful. And I don't think we've even seen Sir so far this season.
Yeah, for sure. And we see that in the new credits too, where we've got the sandwich shop and Tom. It's not, you know, Sir focused anymore. Because Lisa has no involvement in the sandwich shop at all, I think, right? Did she invest in it? I don't think she did.
I don't think she did,
so
yeah.
So it's like, yeah, the most recent restaurant opening is not another Vanderpump restaurant. It's one separate from her. So yeah, her influence does seem to be to be retreating, which is got to be an interesting thing to keep our eyes on moving forward, like through the rest of the season. If we're entering a post Lisa phase, it's just going to become rules. It's just going to become, I don't know.
So what highlights did you have from this episode?
I mean, speaking of the Pump closing, I love the in memoriam style cut that we get. That, yeah. You know, the montage of scenes from the past, very much styled as like an Oscars people who we lost this year segment, with like the classic Vanderpump color spotting to denote a flashback thrown in. It was just great, very cheesy and full of emotions. There's been a lot of, so far of this season, of like reckoning with loss as like an undercurrent. So I thought that kind of,
yeah,
you know, the loss of past relationships, past friendships, and just have this kind of sappy, sad sequence about this bar where all these memories happen closing just seems to kind of further deepen that idea that like loss is going to be something that that we're going to be talking about a lot this season, maybe.
Yeah, totally. Did you have any other highlights from this episode?
I did. I do have to hand it to James Kennedy for having a good episode. He was very, very funny.
He's been great. He's been great this season so far.
He has had some funny moments. Yeah, like when he's proudly touring his house and being like, you know, huge bathtub, big ass shower, very proudly. It was like really funny. I also just like seeing him and Allie walking their dog in like what looks like the most unlivable suburb in the San Fernando Valley, and being like, oh, this is so great, you can't do this on the other side of the mountains, can you? Like, what we can't do what? Like walk your dog through like.
They didn't even have a dog. They were just talking about getting a dog.
Oh, right. It was like
a practice walk.
Yeah. I mean, they're visualizing the dog. Yeah. Just, just like through the most like cookie cutter, like lifeless boulevard you could imagine next to the airport. Yeah. very funny. I do got to give him props for his line about walking into Sandoval's party and being like, yeah, is there really who's who in there? I'm looking around everywhere like, who are you? You don't know the words, do it. That's pretty funny.
Yeah. Yeah. And I love the clip that we got immediately after it, where there's this guy talking to James and he looks so completely uninterested. And he's like, look, if I'm not going to talk to Sandoval, I'm out of here right now.
Yeah.
Doesn't even like take the time to process what this guy's saying.
Yeah. He's like, and point in fact, I don't know if you know who the fuck this guy is.
Like I was saying, who the fuck is this guy?
And that's, And that's just classic James Kennedy, like putting social capital above everything else, which is obviously very social capital is very important for all these people. But for James Kennedy, it's like seems to be really the thing he cares about. And I'm sure he would be team Tom Sandoval if like that's where the social capital was. If other people were lining up behind Tom, that's where he would be. Like he has no motivations that moral motivations or like, feeling loyalty to Ariana or anything. It's just like, he sees everybody lining up on Ariana's side. Now he sees his chance to increase his importance. So that just kind of really underlines that where he's going into like, oh, I'm just going to go scope out Sandoval's party now that, Sandoval's coming back here. And for Sandoval too, I feel like that's maybe kind of the point of him throwing his party too, is he's like Napoleon returning from exile. Yeah, he's like, he knows he has no generals left, but he's just going to see if he can, get some soldiers to start coming to his side once he returns to the mainland, and then, see if maybe he can tilt some of the balance of power in his favor, and so he seems to be making a bit of a show of being like, I'm going to show that I still have some people behind me, even the people he has behind him are like his assistant and like the manager of his band, basically people on his payroll.
And Billy Lee
and Billy. Yeah. And Billy who's there too. Yeah. Inviting James, I think is maybe part of that too, being like, oh, like, let's just like put some feelers out there. And for James too, he's putting some feelers out there, be like, okay, let's see who this returned Napoleon has actually, how many soldiers he actually has managed to like summon as the first step of his comeback, and is immediately like, okay, there's no social capital on this side. So this is not worthwhile totally. At all. Yeah.
Doesn't even have Allie get out of the car. Just going to make a quick like recon, see what he can get out of it.
Why did Allie even go in the car? Why is she even there? They pull up and she's like, I'm not going in. Like, why are you there then? I don't know.
They're going to go to emo night, I think.
Oh, were they stopping on their way to emo night? Okay, that makes sense.
I think so, yeah.
They didn't look like they were dressed for it, though. I guess James was all in black, but none of them had, like, eyeliner on.
I think we covered most of what I wanted to talk to. Oh, you know what? We haven't talked about Sheena, who I thought had, a pretty good episode.
She did.
I really appreciate like what Sheena brings to this show. I think that she is like really underrated in terms of like what she adds. Like in the seasons where Vanderpump Rules was maybe not at its best, she was always working really hard and always like working with the new cast members that they were trying to make work and stirring shit up. And I thought that we saw like a lot of different dimensions to Sheena this episode. We saw her like, we saw a really emotional side, like a really raw emotional, like pure side when she got into an argument with Brock. But we also saw her kind of like doing her job and trying to like stir shit up. And like, we saw her at work where there was that scene at the pump closing where all the girls are sitting around and Sheena's just like dancing and she's like, oh, I know I need to bring up what's going on with Lisa and Schwartz. And she's like, just like mindlessly doing her job and bringing it up. So I loved Sheena. She also gave us comedy here as well as driving the plot along and giving us like an emotional side, because we got to see her in the studio doing her like screamo version of Good as Gold. Just a very well-rounded effort from Sheena.
Yeah, and she fucking did a terrible job of that. That's okay. Yeah. Because you know,
that was the point.
She's going for it. I agree though. She did have a great episode. I do like that we're seeing a lot of her like reckoning with mental health and like, you know, and focusing more on the new diagnosis that she's had and stuff, her anxiety about Summer Moon too.
And at the same time, using that to introduce a new character who looks like it's going to be the person that is tied up in the love triangle with Tom and Katie. So she's even working when she's giving us that.
I do think there was a lot of vulnerability and a lot of emotion coming from her in this episode. So definitely a good show. Interesting showing from Sheena this time around.
Should we get into Beverly Hills now?
Yeah, let's do it.
Yeah. So what stood out to you about Beverly Hills and how this was told?
I really appreciate that the ashes of legendary American choreographer Merce Cunningham have become like a prop for one of those silly, like, tell us something that you're thinking about games. And also, a Big Lebowski style punchline about the ashes blowing back in people's faces.
Okay, do it.
All right, one step back.
Don't fall, please. Oh my God.
Oh, golly. Sorry, the wind is blowing that way. Sorry, girls.
It's all over Garcelle's back.
It was like Chekhov's gun. As soon as the ashes were introduced.
just really funny. It'd be funny anyways, but the fact that it's like the ashes of like the Leonard Bernstein of dance being used as for this series of gags is beautiful, classic Beverly Hills stuff. Just another great contribution to the culture from Merce.
Anything else in particular about the storytelling here?
About the storytelling, I mean, I like that as a fulcrum a lot. I do find it, it's funny to laugh about because it's just goofy. But I do also find it interesting to have Sutton like just kind of mourning everything at once and just kind of having a bad time and deciding that this is her vehicle that she's going to use to kind of get these emotions out. That's not a bad little bit of emotion going on there. What did you find most interesting?
Yeah, I think that this scene was really great because, like you said, it did have this really goofy element, but it was also clearly the emotional center of this episode. I thought that the letting go ceremony was like a good like mix of genuine like, you know, emotion, and also, you know, in the case of Anne Marie, it was just like trying to say whatever. She didn't really say anything. And then Erica using it as like an opportunity to like try to get a dig in.
I'm here to let this go in representation of all the hurt the last 2.5 years that I feel many of you have contributed to.
God bless Erica Jane. Like, I love that she steps up to the fucking plate and she's like, for me, these white flowers represent fuck all of you.
Yeah. it really, like, she used it like a housewife would use one of those games they play at the dinner table in order to like air a beef, and she saw like this everyone pouring out their emotion and like really not the moment to have a big fuck you, but she used it as that. And it was really pretty brilliant. And I the storytelling piece about that scene that I really liked was the fact that as soon as she like took that moment, that was everyone else's. It was this beautiful group emotional moment. She took that and made it hers. And after that, we got a little like insert shot at the end of the scene of all the things that they were throwing away into the ocean and letting go, just floating on the top of the ocean or on the top of the sea, and kind of alluding to the fact that these things are still sticking around and
the waves are just pushing them back
unresolved.
The waves are just pushing them back to shore. They're not going anywhere.
Yeah, totally. What other highlights did you have here?
There were some good like supporting characters showing up. I enjoyed Trevor, Sutton's friend,
towering
mustachioed queer who, like, when they're driving in the van is just being like, oh, there's a wonderful gay bar over there where it's like in a cave and you have to swim out to it. It just it really really reminded me of, do you remember those like Bill Hader sketches on SNL where he'd play Stefan?
Talked
about it like Weekend Update. Yeah. It's just exactly the kind of things like Stefan would say, you know, like the hottest club in New York is called Cave. It's that thing where you're in a cave and you have to swim to get there. So it was a good character. Manolo was a really good one too, a really good supporting character who shows up and plays flamenco guitar very enthusiastically and claims he wrote a song for everyone. We could have used some more Manolo too.
Yeah, totally.
But if I'm being real, like, I've got my pad of notes I took on the episode, and it's almost 100% just me writing down every single thing that Erica says. Because I just find her so fucking funny. And I thought she was just so on fire in this episode and was just killing it for me. Like, when she describes the ashes being blown back into her face, and she says, I don't know this man. I don't want to taste this man. It's so good.
So good.
Yeah. And I was a little Krabby Patties about it. And sometimes I love how she's like, sometimes watching Erica Jane is like watching like a 60s interview with like Bob Dylan or Marlon Brando or something. Just that kind of like overconfidence and just making completely like cryptic remarks with a stone face that are like just total like impenetrable non sequiturs. Like when Sutton starts saying like, so maybe we're not Erica Jane, and Erica says, yes, you are. What does she mean by that?
Yeah, I was wondering that about that too.
You'll never know. You'll never know what she meant by that. Never. And she's just so fucking evil too. It's great. She's such an evil queen when they're all talking about like, you know, potentially marrying somebody. And she's just says with, you know, again, her stone face and apparent seriousness, why don't you just fuck him up and leave him with all your problems? So it was just amazed by everything coming out of her mouth. That was mostly what I took away from this episode.
Yeah, I love Erica's like continued like insistence on trying to win this apology out of everyone. Like, she is so determined to get it out of everyone, and she gets just like a glimmer of it out of Crystal, and she like latches on. She's like, oh, that's way better than the other women. So I appreciate that this is like her main focus, and she's just like singularly focused on getting this apology.
The only thing she's thinking about is like, who's gonna say I'm sorry to me? And like you say, literally nothing else in her peripheral vision. It's pretty great.
Did you have any other highlights from Beverly Hills?
No, not really. I think, I do. Okay. One more thing.
Sorry.
Why is Sutton so convinced? Do you think that like having a horse is like going to give her a new sense of identity? Why is she so fixated on that being like the thing that's going to fix her? Like, there's literally a point where somebody says, like, who are you? And she says, I'm a woman with a horse.
Stronger than you think. You've gotten so much stronger since
I know. It's crazy.
Since we met. Like, who the hell are you?
I'm a woman with a frickin' horse.
Which seems to have been, like, a theme from the very first episode of the season. Like, what does this horse mean to her? that, like, dealing with all this loss, she's like, this is the purchase that's going to, like, give my life meaning.
Yeah, I have no idea what the, like, fixation is on that, but it's a good opportunity. If you are a horse girl, let us know in the comments what Sutton is talking about.
Yeah, because I don't own a horse, so maybe I'll never know. Maybe I'll never be able to experience that. Maybe that is what I'm missing in my life. Maybe that does fix everything.
There you go. You can be singularly focused on getting a horse too. I think that we've covered most of what I wanted to talk about in Beverly Hills as well. I think, like, I don't know what I feel about Kyle's journey at this point. I just am not really buying into this dynamic that they're teasing between her and Mo. It feels like it's almost being oversold. I'm curious what do you think about that?
They seem to be trying to make that a theme more in the edit than it is in the actual episode, because Kyle's like not saying very much about it, I think, with her friends. You know, they'll ask the occasional question about it, but, like, you know, when they did the ritual of the ashes, she didn't mention anything about
Mo. Exactly.
Though they did include, like, a clip of a confessional of her being like, oh, maybe I was kind of thinking about Mo at that moment, but that's not what she said. So I almost feel like the show is trying to make that a storyline more than it organically is in the conversations that she's having with everyone else.
Yeah. What are you thinking about Kyle in relation to this, like, season as a whole?
I want to see more before the season ends of Kyle and Morgan. That interests me a lot. The dissolution of her and Mo is something that I thought maybe we would see, like, more happening in front of us than we have, maybe. I feel like maybe more of that's going on behind the cameras and in front of it than I would like for it to, like, you know, be a really compelling storyline.
Yeah, totally. I agree. I feel like if this is actually the time where there's a legitimate, like, breakdown in their marriage and she is, you know, moving on with Morgan, I really would like to see more of that storyline, because I feel like what we're getting out of Kyle is not compelling. And she's really feeling like she's doing a lot of self-producing, which is... I think that there's a way that you can self-produce well. You can be like one of these personalities that produces well and one that doesn't. And I think, like, the difference is if you are trying to, like, self-produce in order to control your image, and if you've got your actual, like, personality so tied to the character that you're presenting on screen that you're trying to, like, control every element of it, that is not that fun. And that's what it feels like with Kyle. I would be, like, totally open to seeing her, like, take a break for a season or two and, like, bring back someone like Lisa Vanderpump, who I think also is very, like, is a producer, but I think she was one of the best people at being that producer type on-screen persona, because the way that she did it, like, she was producing things external to herself. She did do, like, manage her self-image. All of them do that. But I feel like Lisa Vanderpump, the way that she, like, manipulated situations and used other people to do her bidding without getting her, like, her hands dirty, I love that type of, like, housewife gameplay. And I would really like to see that element of agitation come back to this group, because it does, I feel like, it's getting maybe a little stagnant.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, we love to see we love an OG, and it's nice to have, like, one of those veterans who's been around forever. But the downside of that is that when they've become so experienced and so practiced and so used to it, if they don't want you to know about something in their life, they know how to kind of to bury the lead a bit. And I feel like we're kind of seeing that with Kyle, and that she might be going through like a fascinating personal transformation that if she doesn't want that to be a focus of the episode, she knows how to make sure it isn't.
Yeah. And I think the difference is like, I mean, I talked a little bit about Lisa Vanderpump doing this. Another person that was really great at doing this was Lisa Rinna. And she was like managing her own image, but she did create a separation between like Lisa Rinna, the person, and Lisa Rinna, the character on this show. And she was really good at producing Lisa Rinna, the character on this show. And I feel like the fact that Lisa Rinna came in like, and right out of the gates, she was Lisa Rinna, the character. She was the shitzer, the villain. Like, she was playing this character from the very beginning. But Kyle, we have seen Kyle present herself as like this authentic like person on camera. And in the middle of the off season between shooting the last season of Beverly Hills and this season, it feels like she flipped a switch and now we're getting Kyle the character. Like, all of a sudden she's like, oh, I don't drink anymore. By the way, I don't even drink soda anymore. And is just like putting this like really controlled version of herself out that, you know, at this point where it's a very like pivotal moment for like Kyle the person's character arc, it's really disappointing that we're seeing, you know, that kind of tempered back and throttled. I'm hoping that there's more to come on this in the rest of the season, but it is leaving me a like with a little bit of a bad taste in my mouth.
Yeah
tastes like MRSA. I think we covered about everything that I wanted to cover. Let's quickly give our picks for who our stars are for both Vanderpump Rules and Beverly Hills. Let's start with Vanderpump Rules. Who are your stars?
First star, I'm giving it to Anne. And I'm not even being glib about that. Yeah. She was literally the most interesting character for me. there's a reason why. That's mostly what I talked about, because I thought she was fascinating. So yeah, let's hit her up with a first star there. Second star, let's give it to Sheena for being vulnerable and talking about her mental health. You know what? We got to give James some daps there too, because he was really funny this episode. I do the episode ending with him pissing on a bush after saying like, is it illegal to piss on a bush? is a great way to end the episode, especially because it's like, he's not gonna know you did that. Like, what is that accomplishing? But it's just a great like, just a great James moment in that kind of like, you know, that essential childishness that he has. Another funny moment was when he's talking about egging houses and he's like, I always go for the windows. That's the menace in me. Gotta give him props for that stuff.
Yeah, you gotta give James a star. He pissed on Ariana's bush, so star worthy performance. I would agree. I think that in addition to James and Sheena, who would be my two picks, I got to give one to Sandoval, just to see him return and, you know, pick up where he left off, really. And, you know, he's just going full bore and seeing what he can do with what he's got left. So I appreciate that he's back and we're going to see more of that.
Yeah, you know what? One more note about Sandoval, him being back, that I find fun too, is because, you know, he just came back from shooting in New Zealand, that kind of special forces, like survivalist training show, right, or whatever. You also see him at the start reading a book, SAS, which is like a special forces survivalist manual. I really hope that's a constant going forward this season, that he's just going to be like getting really into like survivalism. And it would be funny if, like, as he like, you know, goes into like, you know, street fighting mode to try to win back his cred, he's like also like becoming like a big like survivalist guy and being like, I can survive any situation kind of mindset. That would be really, really funny. So I hope that's where this is leading.
Yeah, he's already experienced one apocalypse, so now he's prepping for the next.
There you go.
How about for Beverly Hills?
No surprise, my number one is Erica.
Yeah.
just what a lovely human being. Let's give Sutton the number two. It's her episode in a lot of ways, so sure, let's give her that. And number three, Merce Cunningham. You'll be missed. Craig, throw up a little montage of Merce Cunningham's best moments here with some sad music.
Dedicate this episode to him.
I want to release these ashes in a significant place and make this a really meaningful trip.
Will he fit in this little container?
Well, if we dump the ashes in there.
I know you love Merce, but Merce was in a Ziploc bag.
Merce is in the purse.
Okay, do it.
All right, one step back.
Don't fall, please. Oh, my God.
Oh, Colleen. Oh, sorry, the wind is blowing that way. Sorry, girls.
It's all over Garcelle's back.
Yeah, I think my number one pick is going to be Sutton. I just find her like a really endearing character. She's likable. She gives us a lot of like emotional highs and lows, and just really interesting to watch. And, you know, her being at the crux of the emotional center of this episode, I got to give it the number one to her. I think you're right. Erica had a great episode. She's really showing why she is just such a great housewife, because even from like her position at the bottom of the ladder here, she's still able to act as though she's at the top and look down on people and try to command totally. Things that she's got no right to command. So I love Erica's journey right now, and we get to see, you know, the based on the pieces of Erica that got stripped away by her downfall, what remains is like still a very like compelling housewife persona. So, love that. And then I think that number three, I like Crystal this season, so I'm going to give her the third star, even though I don't think like she had a huge impact this season. I think that, or this episode, I think that, her letting go, I feel like that was her like giving us like authentic emotion. And I am appreciating this journey that she's on, and that she's like fully giving us the authenticity that we're not getting out of Kyle right now. Or maybe I should give a star to Dorit's Spanish, her Coca-Cola Normal or whatever.
Yeah, Coca-Cola Normale. gotta specify. Yeah.
Cool. Well, I think that about does it. Dylan, want to let everyone know where they can find you?
I write about movies on Substack as Dylan Ferguson, which also happens to be my name. It's just a coincidence.
Awesome. Well, I'm Craig Midwinter. You can just find me at Bravo Outsider on Instagram and TikTok. You can find our website, bravooutsider.com. Be sure to like and subscribe, leave a review, tell your friends. That helps us out a ton. Until next week, keep on wifing.
Bye.